what led to the idea to bring students to Peru to actually do some reporting in a foreign country?
I've been doing a lot of international work, doing journalism training in other countries in Eastern Europe, Southeast Asia, and I've made several visits to Latin America. And I felt it was really important for the journalism students, with all the emphasis now on globalization, to experience what it's like to report in another country and to sort of go in, land in another country, have a limited amount of time, and have to come back with stories that are reflective of a deeper level of the country than just what a tourist might experience.
And you had lived there at one point, right?
Not in Peru.
In Peru itself.
In Italy, yeah.
Okay. But Abby and Adam, it's obviously a bit disconcerting to, you know, get off a plane and find yourself in a completely different country and having to do some of the jobs that you have done as student journalists back here in the States in familiar territory.
I think it really depended on the student. I think some of us have traveled the world, various places. Some of us may have never been outside the U.S. border. So I think we all came at it from a different perspective. For some of us, we hit the ground running. Others were a little more hesitant, and it took a little more time to acclimate. I think we all felt like by the third week, we were really starting to get our bearings and really becoming comfortable with the country in general and the customs and the way that you just go about business there. And I think all of us felt like, gee, if we had one more week to do this, we could get that much better of a story and talk to, you know, more people and get more material. But I think overall, people maintain positive attitudes, and we all knew what we were there to do. And it was just, we ran into all kinds of different obstacles, as you do reporting anywhere. Maybe a few more due to the language barrier and whatnot. But I think that
I was going to say Spanish was going to be barrier number one. You've got to function in a completely new language.
Right, exactly. We had two fluent Spanish speakers in our class, and they were stretched very thin among the rest of us, always grabbing one of them to take to an interview to do translating or to help us after we'd conducted an interview. So it was a challenge, definitely.
How did you prepare for this?
Well, we'd spent the semester doing research, and most of the students were pretty, from the get-go, knew what they wanted to focus on. And you know, Google is the first thing you do, and it's from there you go through LexisNexis, you go through books. We had tomes on Peruvian history and literature and culture and politics, and we talked to journalists, some of us anyway, talked to journalists who had been down there, who had lived there, and get as much as you can now, sources, phone numbers. It was surprising how much there actually was that we could get, at least ahead of time, maybe not talking to someone, but knowing who to talk to once we got down there. And then it was a matter of, you know, putting on your shoes and walking out the door.
At least arranging things in advance.
Yeah.
What kind of preconceived notions did you have of Peru before you headed down there? And, you know, what may have changed in your mind about your image of the country once you were there and now that you're back?
I think I expected all of Peru to be like the little places that we visited in Peru. I didn't expect to go to Lima and find a big bustling city. I mean, I should have known that, I guess, but I just sort of expected everything to be very primitive. And I kept wondering, like, the first week we're there in Lima, you know, where are these pictures I've seen and where are these people and where's this poverty? Because we were actually staying in a really nice section of Lima in a pretty nice hotel. And from what we could see around us, it didn't look all that bad. It didn't look that much different than a U.S. city. You've got your tall buildings and your people in suits on the streets and your nice hotel. And until we ventured out of Lima, it was not exactly what I had expected. Once we started to see some other areas, we saw Machu Picchu, we saw Cuzco, and we saw some little, what were referred to as Indian villages, that started to look a little bit more like what I had anticipated.
So you saw a pretty broad range of how people lived in the country,
I think so. We saw in Cuzco and in Machu Picchu, we saw a lot of tourism, which is not exactly characteristic of the way life probably is day in and day out. A lot of the people that live there are more or less putting on a show for the tourists, and they've learned how that system works. They've learned.
So it is part of their life, even though it is maybe a a fictional type of life.
Sure. I think Adam's probably a better person to ask about this.
But it that's a phenomenon that I guess is in the most of the developing world when tourism becomes a major industry. What we saw is that these people's lives now are sort of transformed, whereas it doesn't seem like a real culture. In fact, that is their culture. The girls running alongside the train offering, you know, lukewarm water and tepid beer, and women trying to sell you all sorts of, you know, artist works. That is now part of the culture. And unfortunately, then, my reaction to that was that it's almost sad then how much their life hinges on me being a, you know, rich Western tourist, essentially.
What kind of issues do they face? Are what is important to them similar to what issues are important to Americans?
I think the day-to-day life, I mean, the people I talked with, you know, they want the same things that we do. It's just theirs is a different, you know, we want security and comfort and economic stability and all that. We just already have it, so we sort of forget that we need it. If it was taken away, we wouldn't like that too much. They're clamoring for it. They want education. They want safe drinking water. They want infrastructure. They want transportation. It's just much more apparent to them because they don't have it.
What are some of the issues that you're going to take up in the series then?
I think we've got a pretty broad scope of topics ranging from tourism, for instance, to education and the economy. We even take an up-close look at prison conditions and the evangelical movement in the country. I mean, it's a pretty wide range of topics, I think.
Now that you're back, what are some of the images that you've carried back from Peru that you think have made the biggest impact on you?
I spent a couple days up in the mountains away from the group, and one day I was without a translator, and so I flagged down a cab and did my best Spanish and just kind of bombed around. And at one point I was in a small village looking for a kid who I had met yesterday, and so it's kind of a go to the school, find the professor, find another student who knows another student who knows a third student who can find me Eric Viega. And then, you know, three kids cram into the cab with me and we go driving through some back alleys till we get to this kid's house. And you knock on this corrugated metal door that's painted green with a really beat up wooden frame and opens out into a dirt courtyard. And this is where this kid lives. There's a kind of a two-room shack off to the left, and he just sort of sticks his head out and, hey, how's it going? And that's that sort of intimate reality that it wasn't, no one was trying to sell me anything, no one was treating me as though I was a tourist, no one was, you know, hey, Mr. American, can I borrow a dollar? It was just a sort of real in someone's home moment that will stick with me for a long time.
I think one of the things that has really stuck with me and I've thought about a lot since I had the experience doesn't have anything to do with the story that I was personally covering, but I accompanied another classmate to a terrorist prison in Cajamarca to follow her story, and I just sort of went along for extra security, I guess. And meeting with people inside the prisons who are convicted terrorists or political prisoners was very enlightening because I'm thinking about these people and how they're perceived by most Peruvians. And I think that they're probably looked at a lot in the same fashion that we look at a lot of Al-Qaeda terrorists or something like that. But sitting with them in their prison cell and having a conversation, it was so surreal because it was like, this is just a normal person. And they're very warm and inviting and just telling you their feelings about things, and their opinions and their views don't seem so out there. I mean, it doesn't seem like, you know, anything that one or another academic here on campus may feel, but they took it to the next level and now they're in prison. But it just made me really take a step back and look at our own country and the things that are going on here and all the events and the occurrences that have taken place since September 11th here, and makes you really wonder if we're doing things right, or, you know, what else these people may have to say that no one's listening to at this point.
You had mentioned you had talked about Lori Berenson in your story. Did you meet Lori at all? Were you able to?
We did meet with Lori. Ryan Hubbard, one of my classmates, was actually doing a story about prison conditions, and we met with Lori just to have a conversation with her. She's not allowed to do any interviews as a part of her agreement with the government. But we did meet with her briefly and have a short conversation with her. But the interviews were all done with other prisoners who were with either the rebel group Shining Path or the MRTA.
Anything else to add?
I just want to say that what I thought was really valuable about the trip, just in observing how people were acclimating and also what they were getting from it, is that several people were just, well, when are we going to see the real Peru, you know, when we're in Lima? And then we went to Cusco, and it's kind of touristy, and then we walked 2.5 hours to this smaller indigenous community. And to me, the point was, this is all the real Peru, that there isn't a real Peru. There's an image that you're sold in magazines and in tourist information that is the image that they want to project, that any country wants to project as something exotic, something interesting, a place you want to visit. But that doesn't reflect the daily lives of everyone living in that country. And part of the goal of this trip was to show that the real Peru is everywhere. It's in Lima. It's in Cusco, where the tourists are. It's also in these small indigenous communities.
And daily life can be strikingly similar to just about anywhere else in the world.
Exactly.
And that's one of our points, I think, in our radio documentary, is that there are all kinds of people living different realities. And one of the things that we point out in a lot of the different stories is that there's so much difference in the way various groups, various socioeconomic groups, various ethnic groups are perceived in Peru, among Peruvians.